In 1964, Congress declared bourbon America's native spirit. In the eyes of many, it was an honor that was long overdue. With pre-prohibition roots in Kentucky's Bourbon County, the spirit has always had deep economic and cultural ties to our state and its residents. And right now, of course, we're in the midst of a bourbon boom.
You've heard the stats. There are more bourbon barrels aging in Kentucky than there are people. And production has increased more than 170% since 1999. The effects can be seen all around Louisville. There's the Urban Bourbon Trail, the renovation of historic Whiskey Row, Down One Bourbon Bar with its cases and cases of the spirit.
But if you travel just a few blocks outside of downtown, it's evident that bourbon isn't the most popular item on the shelves.
I'm serious. Why are you looking at me?
Here we are, several weeks back, at the liquor store. Yes, that's its name, at 26 and Broadway. It's a small neighborhood shop that has been owned by Sandra Fant for the last 8 years. About 90% of her customers are African American. There has been an increase in customer interest in bourbon for the last 2 years, but it hasn't been and still isn't her best-selling spirit. That would be
vodka, mostly gin. That's the main two items, vodka and gin.
We visited four more liquor stores that afternoon in some of Louisville's primarily African-American neighborhoods. Vodka and gin were, by far, the most popular answers when we asked, "What do your customers drink?"
It's almost like the bourbon boom has skipped these places. I'm Roxanne Scott.
And I'm Ashley Stevens. This year, 89.3 WFPL News is taking a deep look at race, ethnicity, and culture in our community. For the next Louisville series, which is produced with support from the Community Foundation of Louisville, we're making a documentary or discussion on the radio and online once a month all year. They focus on how race and ethnicity affect who we are and how we live.
Here in Louisville, bourbon is all around us. History and current marketing trends show that America's native spirit has by and large ignored or erased the presence of African-American producers and consumers. So, where are the Black people in bourbon?
To try to find the answer, we talk with historians and marketing professionals in the industry. We also visited one of the state's whiskey museums, as well as distilleries and neighborhood liquor stores.
And while we didn't get all the answers we were looking for, one thing is for sure. There's room for bourbon to market to a broader audience.
Here, but I kind of just like to start off in here by asking a couple questions, figuring out what's going on. So who in here has gone on any other bourbon tour, bourbon trail, bourbon experience?
So weeks before Ashley and I even thought about doing this project, I had some friends visiting Kentucky for the first time. And we decided to do some bourbon distillery tours, just like nearly 600,000 visitors do each year. Afterwards, I called my friend Daryl Charles to see what he thought about the experience. He's one of the friends who visited, and he lives in Baltimore.
What did you notice about all the tours we went on?
Oh, the thing that I noticed the most about the tours that we went on is that we brought all of the Black people who were on those tours. We brought all of the people of color that were on the tours. It was three of us, and there were three people of color on the premises. If it wasn't for us, the only Black things those people would have seen were was the soot on the signs and the trees.
Daryl's comment might seem a little hyperbolic, but when you take a look at data about African Americans' buying power and bourbon consumption, there's definitely room to market more directly to multicultural audiences. We spoke with some representatives from the consumer studies team at Nielsen, yes, the same organization that does TV and radio ratings, about the numbers on African Americans and bourbon consumption.
They actually account for a much higher percentage of overall spirits volume, but they represent only a little bit more than 9% of bourbon consumption. So they're underdeveloped relative to their importance overall within the population.
That's Danny Brager, Senior Vice President of Beverage Alcohol at Nielsen. And according to him, while spirits is a very developed category sales-wise, bourbon is super underdeveloped among African Americans. That suggests opportunity, based on the consumer data at least. Check out what Courtney Jones, Vice President of Multicultural Growth and Strategy of Nielsen, says about Black Americans buying power in the U.S.
Currently, it is for African Americans. For 2015, it was estimated about $1.2 trillion. Projected for 2020 around $1.4 trillion.
That's dollars, which is something that should appeal to those interested in making Louisville the premier bourbon destination in the country. Organizations like the Mayor's Metro Bourbon Council and the Convention and Visitors Bureau. But there's more to diversifying bourbon than simply retooling current marketing campaigns to actually include people of color. though that would help.
More on that in just a bit.
There's an important and mostly hidden backstory here. Almost a century and a half of Kentucky bourbon history from which African Americans have been pretty much erased.
And the past is something that needs to be addressed before looking to attract future bourbon drinkers.
Here we are at the Oscar Getz Museum of Whiskey History in Bardstown. Outside, construction crews are building booths and pitching tents for the upcoming annual Kentucky Bourbon Festival. The museum is a one-story walkthrough that chronicles the history of American whiskey from colonial days through the 1960s.
And what we saw, for me, was surprising and not surprising at the same time. A lot of images of servitude.
Yeah, for example, we saw an advertisement from Paul Jones and Company of a woman in a headscarf, kind of a mammy Aunt Jemima figure, holding a watermelon.
Oh boy.
And in the same image, an older black man serving or holding whiskey.
I didn't see a whole lot of context to African Americans in the images. Who were they? What were their roles? And we didn't see a whole lot of African Americans drinking bourbon either.
Yeah, they were either tangential to the process, you know, standing in the back of group shots, or they're bringing it in on a platter.
I definitely didn't think I was the target audience, especially when we saw that huge Confederate flag in that one part of the museum, which, side note, wasn't Kentucky a Union state? But I digress.
Chet Johnson is the organizer behind Bourbon and B-Sides. He says marketing like this was not uncommon.
A lot of these bourbon labels, historically, when you look at old bourbon advertisements, they have these caricatures of stereotypical African Americans, you know, kind of like the whole minstrel type of imagery that you would see, like, you know, somebody coal black with their eyes bugging out with the red lips, those types of damaging stereotypes you saw in bourbon marketing in the past.
It's this part of history that's tied to bourbon that can make it feel like such an exclusive place. Something Daryl touched on when we talked.
Bourbon is often conflated with, like, images of the flag and America, not to mention, you know, backwoods Kentucky. And most of those words don't make me feel comfortable in a conversation. And most times when those words are used to advertise for something, the demographic that they're advertising to is not me. It's why I don't own a truck. It's why I don't drink Budweiser. It's why I don't drink bourbon.
Patrick Lewis is a historian with the Kentucky Historical Society. He specializes in topics such as slavery and the Civil War, among other things. We talked with him about African Americans' place in bourbon history.
We know that slaves, of course, grow the raw products that go into bourbon, the grains that come out of it. And we know that slaves live and work on farms, mills, where bourbon is produced, right? The still is a part of that agricultural production just as much as the mill is. The question that we have is whether slaves are actually working at producing and distilling the bourbon. And that is a tougher one to get at just because we don't know very much about the day-to-day work of slaves on most Kentucky farms. So African Americans obviously play a very large part in that post-Civil War bourbon story. And that is much easier to document because we have those corporate records, quite frankly. But while slavery is ongoing, distilling is happening at a much more local level, and that's tougher for historians to get at, which is a terrible, terrible non-answer.
So even though most of the history of bourbon appears to be whitewashed, more spirit companies are recognizing the impact that people of color had on what we drink. Take Jack Daniel's, for example. This year was the 150th anniversary of the Tennessee-based whiskey distillery, and as the New York Times reported in June, they are beginning to embrace a, quote, hidden ingredient, help from a slave. For years, the story of Jack Daniel's is pretty basic. When Daniel's was a boy, he worked for a preacher/distiller named Dan Call. Call taught Daniel's to operate the still, and the rest was history.
The Times says that story is a pretty typical whiskey narrative. A lily-white affair that centered on German and Scot-Irish settlers who distilled their surplus grains into whiskey and sent it to far-off markets. But the real story is a little more complicated than that. The company now says Jack Daniel didn't learn distilling from Dan Call, but from a man named Naris Green, one of Call's slaves.
According to reps from Jack Daniels, Green's existence wasn't a major secret or anything, but like the photos we saw at the Getz Whiskey Museum, his presence as a black man in distilling wasn't ever really addressed.
Currently, the distillery, which has been owned for about 60 years by the Louisville-based Brown-Forman, is slowly integrating Green into the brand. His name is starting to come up in tours and on social media.
But it's an uncomfortable history to navigate. A business built with slave labor may not work real well as a selling point, and the company is still considering whether it will flesh out the story in new displays at its visitor center.
But it's important that these stories are told.
Not all African-American involvement in bourbon looks so...
bleak?
Exactly. Take the story of Tom Bullock. He was a Louisville-born bartender who, in 1917, became the first African-American to write a cocktail book. It was called, fittingly, The Ideal Bartender.
He was so good at what he did that one of the members of the St. Louis Country Club, where he eventually bartended, wrote a letter of recommendation that read,
"I doubt that he has erred in even one of his concoctions."
But perhaps most importantly in the context of Kentucky, Bullock is credited with the invention of the original old-fashioned cocktail.
One lump of ice, two dashes of bitters, one lump of sugar dissolved in water, and 1.5 jiggers of bourbon whiskey.
And it's finished off with a twist of lemon skin, stirred well and served. Locally, Joe Herron, the owner of Copper and King's Brandy Distillery, is reminding Louisvillians of Bullock's legacy by serving drinks inspired by The Ideal Bartender, which was recently reprinted. He's inspired by Bullock's story in another way, too. He'd like to see a more diverse staff behind his own bar.
I think that's a big story, because right now, the presence of African-American bartenders is quite low in terms of, you know, talented mixologists. It's quite sporadic. And so we recently ran a mixtape competition where we pair music and cocktails, and you theme the cocktails on songs. And we had two African-American bartenders, and that was quite unusual, actually.
Unusually high, that is.
If I could, I think we would like to develop a bartending skills sort of school and course here available at Copper and King's that could help some disadvantaged communities, because it's a skill, you know, and it's a very transferable skill, which is proved by Tom Bullock, who left, Louisville to go and get really famous in St. Louis.
After the interview, I kept coming back to a term Herron had used, artificial diversity.
I don't think that there's a way of forcing multiculturalism or diversity onto a company or onto a society, or it happens organically and naturally based on something that's called respect.
And the thing about artificial diversity, at least according to Herron, is that customers can tell.
It's something that's part of your DNA as opposed to the strategy of being multicultural. That doesn't work.
Let's look at the spirits that have traditionally done a better job appealing to more diverse drinkers.
Vodka, for example, has a long-standing relationship with entertainers, including 50 Cent, P. Diddy, Nas, just to name a few. They also sponsor concerts and other events that put the spirit in front of their audiences. So does cognac, which both Chet and Daryl mentioned was a favorite of their grandmothers.
And bourbon?
Well, currently there's Mila Kunis and Matthew McConaughey.
I mean, I love Mila and Matthew, but they're not exactly the faces I would use to target African-Americans.
But there is hope. Drake, for example, launched his new alcohol, Virginia Black Whiskey, earlier this year.
And according to GoBourbon.com, the company says the bourbon hopes to bring glamour, swagger, and soul back to the American bourbon whiskey category.
There's even a promo video for Virginia Black. Yep, loungy music, just as I suspected.
Drake doesn't even appear in the video.
There is a mic drop, though. See, this goes back to the idea of artificial diversity. Do you feel more inclined to buy this product?
After seeing this ad, no. But
Doing a little research on Virginia Black and being a huge Drake fan, I would definitely at least give it a shot. Pun intended. On one hand, it would be great to see more diversity represented on bourbon labels. That's a good place to start. But I feel like this kind of stereotyped marketing comes from a lack of diversity on spirit marketing teams. Another area that is primarily white.
True. According to the 2015 numbers from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, only about 4% of those employed in alcohol distribution were African American. Even fewer work on the marketing side. But that's something that could soon be changing. We've talked a lot about the more depressing parts of Black involvement in bourbon. The ties to slavery, the old racist labels, even some of the more off-base contemporary marketing attempts. But there are some companies who are making real changes.
We reached out to Brown-Forman, one of the largest American-owned companies in the spirits and wine business. They're based here in Louisville and represent brands like Jack Daniel's, Early Times, Old Forester, and Woodford Reserve. And they're doing some really cool things. One of the steps they've taken is ensuring that job candidates are interviewed by a variety of people, some of who are from outside an interviewee's geographic location or department. This can prevent bias.
They've also implemented diversity networking groups and a diversity council on staff, as well as starting to recruit and train multicultural talent from the ground up. They've worked with BET Network, which is the number one media property for African-American consumers, and Centric, which is their woman-focused station.
Tennessee Honey also hosts the Jackin' for Beats event, a hip-hop competition that travels between cities.
But perhaps most importantly, marketing and recruiting have teamed up for a new project. They're working with historically Black colleges in their core markets and finding grad students who are available to work with them part-time.
The program is in its second semester right now at two colleges, Howard and Florida A&M.
There are other smaller changes happening, too.
Going back to Chet Johnson, he organized the first Bourbon and B-Sides, and to him it was a success. About 200 to 300 people attended. It was a majority African-American audience and mostly women in the 25 to 40 range. The event had a sponsorship with Larceny Bourbon with free tastings.
There were a lot of people drinking and indulging in bourbon at the event, which is what we hope for.
He's also seeing the boom.
I would say amongst young people, there is a bourbon revival.
He sees more brands reaching out to these audiences, and he thinks the efforts are sincere. For example, leading up to the last Kentucky Derby, there was a free event called Art Beats and Lyrics, sponsored by Jack Daniel's Honey. It's a traveling art exhibition and featured DJs and hip-hop artists from around the country.
So a free event of that magnitude on the biggest weekend in Louisville is almost unheard of, but Brown-Forman and Jack Daniel Honey made that investment to raise awareness of Jack Daniel's Honey with the African-American demographic, and I think that that's major.
We asked him what it'll take to get more African-Americans to drink bourbon.
One part marketing and one part setting the record straight on the history and the contributions of Blacks to the whiskey industry, I think would go a long way.
In spite of bourbon's complicated past, Chet's own experiences with bourbon brought him, in a weird way, closer to home.
Chet attended the University of Kentucky in Lexington. He also has family in Lebanon, Kentucky, where he would visit often when he had time off from school.
Once I started visiting Marion County again regularly, I kind of got in touch with my Kentucky heritage and my country roots, and also researching the history of some of the various Kentucky bourbon brands. They kind of worked in tandem to create a sense of self-discovery and learning more about the roots and origins of Kentucky bourbon. I've come to know a little bit more about myself.
Remember my friend Daryl who visited from Baltimore? It's funny, even after his experience at the distilleries, he says he never felt othered in those spaces. Just alone. He even bought some bourbon on a cruise a few weeks after his visit to Kentucky.
So I guess the answer to the question, where are the Black people in bourbon, is that, for now at least, they're right outside the boom.
But some have already found their own way in. This documentary was written and produced by me, Roxanne Scott, and Ashley Stevens.
Our editor was Stephen George.
The Next Louisville is a partnership between 89.3 WFPL News and the Community Foundation of Louisville. You can hear this program again at WFPL.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks for listening.